Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
I'm going to guess that our next guest here, he's played a little Def Leppard, a little Journey back in the day.
No doubt.
I would imagine so. David Griffin, former GM of the Cavs, Sirius XM, NBA TV. David, Tiki and Tierney, welcome back. How are you?
Hey, guys, how you doing? I like every band that has a one-armed drummer.
Oh, you attaboy. You know he really knows his stuff if he's dropping that little fact. There you go. Okay. So you're watching what we're watching, David, although obviously you know the personnel far more intimately than we do out there in Cleveland. And, you know, it's funny. You start to hear these comments from Van Gundy. You know, you get the eye rolls and the analogy of a poor marriage where there's just uncomfortable body language. Number one, do you sense that? Because I personally don't think that it's really wise to waste a lot of time on how the Cavaliers can change like their talent level, because they're just so one-dimensional outside of LeBron and maybe one or two other guys. I think it's more of a chemistry and a passion issue at this point. How about yourself?
Well, I think the chemistry aspect of it's very true, and I think that's why Ty Lue went back to J.R. Smith, Kyle Korver, Tristan Thompson, Kyle Love, LeBron, guys that knew how to win together and guys that had a level of trust in one another, and more importantly, that LeBron had a level of trust in. You can tell that the group that has not been together, because Kevin had been injured at the end of the year and because so many of the new pieces had been in and out of the lineup with injuries, they were never able to build any kind of continuity. They were never able to really build any kind of trust, and so I think it's just been really difficult for them to build it in the playoffs against a team in Boston that is really all about excellence and execution, and they're going to make you pay when you make mistakes.
You know, David, when you think about, you know, what Ty Lue tried to do, you said go back to that lineup. What does he do now? You know what I mean? They lost by 13 in game two. What does he do now, or if there is even a solution?
Well, I think to a huge degree, going home is going to help. Guys that are not necessarily seasoned playoff players are certainly going to play better at home. So that's a start. I think the other thing you do is you start to lock in far more on the defensive end. If you can get stops and get out and run in transition, then you can sort of mitigate some of the advantage Boston has with their half-court defense. You know, Boston basically switched everything in the first game, and they were kicking guys out of the switch as well. They were doing things that almost looked like triple switching and making sure they had the right guy on the right matchup, and Cleveland played into it by playing slow enough for them to do that. Mm-hmm. The second game, Cleveland's plan was they were going to attack those switches, and so Brad didn't switch as much. So I think at this point what Ty needs to do is, first of all, identify a group that he knows is going to be able to play the way they want to play, but they're going to have to play with pace on the offensive end and really start to do that by getting stops defensively. And I think that means, again, he's going to have to keep Kevin and Tristan on the court, because those guys together historically have done a really good job against Al Horford, by way of example, and you got to start somewhere.
Boy, that's a lot of asterisks there. No, but I hear you. I'm not saying you're wrong, but that's a lot of things that have to happen. David Griffin is with us here, a former GM of the Cavaliers, Sirius XM. You see him on NBA TV as well, Tiki and Tierney, CBS Sports Radio. So it came out yesterday that that LeBron and Ty Lue were pushing for DeAndre Jordan at the trade deadline. You know, I don't know how much that would have solved, because I'm not so sure what you would have had to give up to get him. But if you were still running the team, all right, right before they made the move for the four players and did what they did, was there a better direction to go, a different door to knock on? Was this the best move?
Well, I mean, it's interesting. When they swept Toronto, certainly it looked like the right move. I think it's possible that there's another answer for them. I think they definitely have the ability to do some different things than they've done. But, you know, again, before LeBron gets hit in the mouth and they're up 11 in the second quarter of that game, they were doing everything that they needed to do. So it's hard for me to say that it's all personnel. I don't know what was on their table at the time. I don't know what opportunities they were weighing, but I think they ran into a situation where the nucleus they had wasn't working. Spiritually, it was completely broken, and they went on a little run after they made the deal simply because they traded for a LeBron James that was psychologically completely engaged with that group. And again, they've got to get back to playing with that level of urgency, certainly, but they were doing it in the second quarter of this series. So it's hard for me to think there's, you know, you said a lot of asterisks there that they have to correct. I think they need to get back to where they were at that moment. And I don't know if LeBron can do that. I've never seen that look in his face before, but you could tell that group lost a lot of confidence very quickly, and Boston was able to sort of flip the script pretty quickly as well.
Yeah, you know, and Boston is they're playing unbelievable, especially for a team that's so many young guys in critical positions. Now, you know Kyrie Irving very well, and he's obviously been sitting on the bench for the last couple of months now because of injuries. But are you surprised, as I think all of us are, probably not at this point, but when it first started happening, how good they are without him? And it brings up the question, what is Danny Ainge ultimately decide to do, or how does he value Kyrie if they get to the NBA Finals without him?
Well, it's funny. You could say the same thing about Gordon Hayward, right?
I mean, that's a good point.
Fascinating situation. Because of the loss of Hayward, they were able to play Tatum and Jaylen Brown a lot more early. They were able to lean on them a lot more early, and they've grown by leaps and bounds. And since Kyrie was out, you know, permanently from the lineup, Terry Rozier has been able to do the same thing. So I don't know if it's that you're not going to value them or that you're not going to place as much value on them. I think it's going to accelerate the timeline for when you really expect yourself to be the dominant team in the East. What's a really compelling question, I think, for Boston is how much do you pay Marcus Smart? How do you keep this group together into the future? Because I think there's a pretty clear argument that can be made even if you win the East without those two guys. The way you actually win the title is going to require their presence.
Hey, David, if you were only able to choose one of the two following players, would you take Tatum or would you take Jaylen Brown?
Gosh, that's a tough question. I think I would probably take Tatum to more teams than not. I think he requires less fit necessarily than Jaylen does. But there are circumstances where I think Jaylen's, you know, the exact right piece. You know, he's such a different specimen physically in terms of the defensive side of the ball. Jason's never going to be that kind of physical presence, I don't think. Jaylen can play a lot of four. I think they play Tatum at some four. But I think Tatum fits across more of the 30 teams than Jaylen does. But they're both really elite in their own right.
They are. They are good, man.
Yeah, Dave, we only got a little bit of time here, but there's two guys I want to ask you about. One is Kawhi Leonard and what you actually think, what you think is going to happen with that situation down in San Antonio. And the other one is Boogie Cousins. Where can he fit in? He wants to go to contender. Where can he go that fits right for what he's, I think, become? Because I think he got rid of that I'm a malcontent that hung over his head with the Kings when he was down in New Orleans. So where can he fit?
Again, a really good question. I think for New Orleans, the question is, what's it worth to pay to Marcus as he's coming off this injury to figure out exactly how good he can be for next season? Because typically that's a full year injury, especially a guy with that size who's a one-foot jumper, and he tore the Achilles on his push-off leg. So that's a really profoundly difficult situation for them. I think he's a great fit for almost anybody that wants to play two bigs that are really skilled. So in the New Orleans situation, it was great. If you've got two bigs and you can force Golden State to keep a center on the court, in the Western Conference, that might be a formula that works. I mean, you could see him in San Antonio with LaMarcus Aldridge, by way of example.
Wow.
I don't know if two bigs works, but if you're going to play him, you're going to play him for that exact reason, because you wanted to have an advantage against Golden State. And I know that's what New Orleans was thinking.
Yeah.
The problem they have is they might actually get the full bandwidth of Anthony Davis at five, so they might not ever make it to that matchup if they have both of pieces together.
Yeah.
And I find that fascinating. The first one, the Kawhi Leonard thing, for 21 years, the Spurs have figured it out. And they've always found a way to figure it out. And Pop figured it out with LaMarcus Aldridge. I think part of the solution to keeping LaMarcus happy was to run the offense through him more. And maybe Kawhi's not super comfortable with that. But I'm going to just assume that they're going to do what they've always done, and they're going to figure it out. You know, once they sit down in a room and it's not the uncle doing the talking anymore, and it's not the agency, and it's not all the noise being made, but it's actually two grown men sitting across from each other. Pop tends to do awfully well when grown men are in the room.
That's a good way to frame it. I'm a little less encouraged. I just feel like they're kind of getting toward the end of the part of the plank where it's time to jump at some point, but we'll see. They certainly have enough lineage there to suggest that that they can fix it. I do want to ask
you
this. Go ahead, David. I'm sorry.
But it's interesting. So they're the only franchise where the Popovich has the level of power that if he just says flatly, no, I won't trade you, I will never be the one to trade Kawhi Leonard, in much the same way that Dr. Buss said, I will never trade Kobe Bryant.
Yep.
Then Kawhi's not getting traded.
That's true.
And that's a really unique situation, and you couple it with a guy who's been as significant as he's been from a leadership perspective. You know, if Kawhi himself was out there talking and saying negative things, I'd agree with you that they're at the end of the plank. But I don't think we've even gotten to the plank yet until I hear him say something.
All right, we'll have a chance to revisit that for sure. David Griffin is with us here, Sirius XM, NBA TV, and he's with us here on Tiki and Tierney. Not a lot of time on this, but I just give a quick thought on the coaching carousel. What was the biggest surprise? What did you like the best? What really jumped out to you with the wave of coaching hires?
Well, you know, I think the biggest surprise for me really was how quickly Phoenix settled on Igor Kokoschkov. I think it's a really good hire. I like it a lot. Igor's somebody that I know well. I was with him in Phoenix. He was with us in Cleveland at one point as an assistant also.
Mm-hmm.
It was fascinating to me that they went with Igor as quickly as they did before the lottery. I think everybody thought that the Igor signing might have signaled that they were more on the Luka Doncic path from a draft perspective. And I don't necessarily think that's true now. And I also think that signing Igor when they did was fascinating because I don't know who they were competing against in a timing standpoint. And again, this is a coach I love, so I think it's a great hire. I was just surprised with when they did it.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that the hire of Budenholzer is just an amazing fit for Milwaukee. I think he's been incredibly successful with scoring point guards, if you can even call them point guards, the likes of Teague and Schroeder, and that's certainly a good fit with Bledsoe. I think all of his motion-oriented things are going to put Giannis in a position to be very successful, and that's important because he's not at all a shooter, so you need somebody who's been successful with similar roster types, and Bud certainly has been.
That's great stuff. David, appreciate you hopping on, man. Thank you very much, and enjoy the weekend games, and we'll circle back on that Popovich, Kawhi Leonard stuff, see who's right.
All right, man, I'll be ready.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.